This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Thank you for tuning in to Trumpet Hour. This is Joel Hilliker. Richard Levine was born in 1957. He graduated high school in Belmont, Massachusetts. He went to Harvard College and the Tulane University School of Medicine. He completed a residency in pediatrics and a fellowship in adolescent medicine at the Mount Sinai Medical Center in Manhattan. He was married. He had two children. He sang baritone in musical theater productions. Well, about 20 years ago, he started seeing a therapist. And 13 years ago, he started growing out his hair, and a decade ago, he publicly said he was a woman named Rachel. He spent a year and a half taking voice lessons to sound more like a woman. He and his wife divorced. In 2015, Levine became Pennsylvania's physician general, and then in 2017, he became the secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Health. Now he is President Joe Biden's nominee for Assistant Health Secretary. If Dr. Levine is confirmed, he would be the first openly transgender federal official to be confirmed by the Senate. His confirmation hearing was last week. And in that hearing, Senator Rand Paul questioned Dr. Levine about supporting giving children puberty blockers and sex change surgeries. This is a segment of his questioning and Levine's responses.
Genital mutilation has been nearly universally condemned. Genital mutilation has been condemned by the WHO, the United Nations Children's Fund, the United Nations Population Fund. According to the WHO, genital mutilation is recognized internationally as a violation of human rights. Genital mutilation is considered particularly egregious because, as the WHO notes, it is nearly always carried out on minors and is a violation of the rights of children. Most genital mutilation is not typically performed by force, but as WHO notes, that by social convention, social norm, the social pressure to conform, to do what others do and have been doing, as well as the need to be accepted socially and the fear of being rejected by the community. American culture is now normalizing the idea that minors can be given hormones to prevent their biological development of their secondary sexual characteristics. Dr. Levine, you have supported both allowing minors to be given hormone blockers to prevent them from going through puberty, as well as surgical destruction of a minor's genitalia. Like surgical mutilation, hormonal interruption of puberty can permanently alter and prevent secondary sexual characteristics. The American College of Pediatricians reports that 80 to 95% of prepubertal children with gender dysphoria will experience resolution by late adolescence if not exposed to medical intervention and social affirmation. Dr. Levine, do you believe that minors are capable of making such a life-changing decision as changing one's sex?
Well, Senator, thank you for your interest in this question. Transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field with robust research and standards of care that have been developed. And if I am fortunate enough to be confirmed as the Assistant Secretary of Health, I would look forward to working with you and your office and coming to your office and discussing the particulars of the standards of care for transgender medicine.
The specific question was about minors. Let's be a little more specific since you evaded the question. Do you support the government intervening to override the parent's consent to give a child puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and/or amputation surgery of breasts and genitalia? For most of our history, we believe that minors don't have full rights and the parents need to be involved. So I'm alarmed that you won't say with certainty that minors should not have the ability to make the decision to take hormones that will affect them for the rest of their life. Will you make a more firm decision on whether or not minors should be involved in these decisions?
Senator, transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field, and if confirmed to the position of Assistant Secretary of Health, I would certainly be pleased to come to your office and talk with you and your staff about the standards of care and the complexity of this field.
Let it go into the record that the witness refused to answer the question.
There's a reason why Dr. Levine won't answer that question. It's because from the standpoint of transgender activists, the less the public knows about these procedures, the better. The more you know about these procedures, the more appalled you will be. And on today's show, we're going to talk about the facts about what is being hushed up and what they don't want to talk about. Senator Paul was simply trying to get a straight answer about a very important question. And here is how his line of questioning was reported in the media. ABC News says, first transgender nominee deflects inflammatory questions from GOP senator. The Daily Beast reported, Rand Paul launches into transphobic rant against trans nominee. The Washington Post said, Rand Paul's ignorant questioning of Rachel Levine showed why we need her in government. So they were not impressed by Senator Paul. This is what Senator Paul told Glenn Beck about his line of questioning.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is none of it was directed towards her personally or who she is. It was directed towards the question of whether children can consent. And this is an intellectual question. It's not a, inflammatory question. It's a question of serious consequence. Can a young girl of 12 years old or 15 years old, can they consent to an abortion? Can they consent to have their ears pierced? Can they consent to have surgery to change their sex? I mean, these are important questions, and most people would argue that children can't really make an informed consent. You know, we have laws against, you know, a man having sex with a 12-year-old, even if the 12-year-old says yes, because we don't think a 12-year-old is capable of consenting. They just aren't old enough to make the difference.
That's what Senator Paul was trying to get to the bottom of. And according to the media, that was a transphobic rant. The media is totally on board with the transgender movement. They're totally on board with a transgender woman becoming the U.S. Assistant Secretary for the Department of Health and Human Services, the department of the U.S. federal government whose motto is improving the health, safety, and well-being of America. Should children be able to decide for themselves whether to have irreversible surgical and hormonal treatments that destroy healthy body parts? Well, Dr. Levine won't say, but he'll be happy to talk about it after you confirm him to the office of Assistant Health Secretary. And according to the mainstream media, you're a bigot for asking the question. Society has transformed overnight in embracing this radical way of thinking. It's in our media. It's in our politics. It's certain that Dr. Levine will be confirmed. It seems virtually nobody besides Senator Paul even raises an eyebrow about a man who thinks he's a woman becoming the chief advisor to a cabinet-level official in the federal government. Then Biden administration and the new Congress are rapidly moving to enshrine more rights for transgenders into law. Just last Thursday, the House of Representatives passed the Equality Act. It still has to pass the Senate to become law, but this amends civil rights laws to prevent businesses and institutions from discriminating against people based on sexual orientation and gender identity. It says an individual shall not be denied access to a shared facility, including a restroom, a locker room, and a dressing room that is in accordance with the individual's gender identity. This would make it federal law to discriminate against a man who says he's a woman who wants to use a woman's locker room or bathroom. This is a weapon against anyone who doesn't fully embrace this bizarre new understanding of gender, which goes against biology, it goes against science, it goes against the general understanding of how family and society works that has been in place for all of human history. You embrace it or else. This law, if it's passed, it would give the government massive regulatory power. It would coerce, quote, any establishment that provides a good service or program, including a store, shopping center, online retailer or service provider, salon, bank, gas station, food bank, service or care center, shelter, travel agency or funeral parlor or establishment that provides health care, accounting or legal services. And that's along with any organization that receives any federal funding. So you go along with this or basically you are not allowed to participate in public commerce. So it's in our media, it's in our politics. This kind of thinking has been adopted in our schools, even down to kindergarten and preschool. And there are new stories coming out about this all the time. This is one from just a few days ago. The state of Illinois just adopted new standards for K through 12 teachers to obtain or keep their teaching licenses. If you want to teach school in Illinois, then this is what you must agree to. You have to basically indoctrinate students in LGBT and leftist propaganda. I'll just read some language from this document from the Illinois Board of Education. The Illinois Culturally Responsive Teaching and Leading Standards. It includes self-awareness and relationships to others. This the culturally responsive teacher and leader will understand and value the notion that multiple lived experiences exist and that there is not one, quote, correct way of doing or understanding something. He will recognize how their identity, their race, ethnicity, national origin, language, sex and gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, physical, developmental, emotional ability, socioeconomic class, religion, etc., affects their perspectives and beliefs about pedagogy and students. Under the category systems of oppression, it says culturally responsive teachers and leaders understand that there are systems in our society that create and reinforce inequities, thereby creating oppressive conditions. Educators work actively against these systems in their everyday roles in educational institutions. So you can see where this is going. It's talking about all kinds of problems and inequities and systemic racism and sexism and transphobia and so on that exist in our society that these teachers have to be actively working against. This document continues, the culturally responsive teacher and leader will implement and integrate the wide spectrum and fluidity of identities in the curriculum. Spectrum and fluidity. These are terms that you hear over and over when it comes to this new understanding of gender. Now, Stanley Kurtz, senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, he wrote this in the National Review. What's more, the Illinois experience, these new standards for how you have to get a teaching license in Illinois, this is about to go national. A nationwide movement is pushing for the enactment of state history and civic standards on the model of Common Core. That movement is top-heavy with leaders and supporters of the Illinois civics model, considered the ultimate in best practices by the education left. This new education movement wants Biden to follow Obama's lead on Common Core, using federal carrots and sticks to pressure states into adopting woke history/civics standards. The eventual result would be action civics on the Illinois template in every state in the union. The bottom line is schools are increasingly imposing this type of thinking, this kind of teaching on our children. The media are pushing it, and our young people are growing up in a world where homosexuality and pansexuality and transgenderism and gender fluidity, these are celebrated. And these young people, our young people, are getting the message. A new Gallup poll just found that of all adults in the United States, 5.6% identify as LGBT. Now, that's up from 3.5% in 2012. That's a 60% jump in less than a decade. Now, what's driving this increase more than anything? Well, it's the younger generation. You look at the breakdown of the individual groups here. Traditionalists, those born before 1946, 1.3% LGBT. Baby boomers, 2.0. Generation X, those born 1965 to 1980, that's 3.8. Millennials, born 1981 to 1996, 9.1. And then Generation Z, born between 1997 and 2002, 15.9%. Nearly 16% of Generation Z considers themselves LGBT. Among the people basically in their 20s, 24 to 29, that's nearly one in six people. And the media and society says, hey, this is worth celebrating. This is a real success. Do they have any idea the implications of these numbers? There are a lot of people who they just want to practice tolerance. They just want to be accepting. Do they realize what is happening to society and what we're doing to these young people? We're just embracing this. We're adopting all of this so rapidly and hastily. We're not even considering all of the ramifications. And in its haste to show itself so accepting and tolerant and welcoming of men like Richard Levine, who decide they're actually women, society is overlooking and ignoring and even trampling on many important truths. Society needs to understand the truth about transgenderism. It's hard to even imagine all the changes in society that are being demanded by transgender activists. This isn't just a matter of accepting a handful of people whose thinking doesn't match their biology. This has huge ramifications in every aspect of modern life. There's the economic questions in areas like public bathrooms and gym facilities and prisons and homeless shelters and so on. But it goes beyond that into the educational realm and even into questions about freedom of speech and freedom of religion, whether you can be fined or jailed for failing to be fully supportive of this movement or whether you're actually free to live by the dictates of your own conscience. So this isn't something society can afford to accept lightly. It demands a full accounting of the facts and the truth. And that's really what you saw in that confirmation hearing. Senator Rand Paul just asking some questions and trying to get to the truth. And Dr. Levine's refusal to answer those questions is just a small taste of the fact that this movement has no real interest in facts or truth or anything that would undermine its forward momentum in transforming society. If you want some important truth about transgenderism, you should read Ryan T. Anderson's book, When Harry Became Sally. The subtitle of that book is Responding to the Transgender Moment. Dr. Anderson is president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He's written four books. He's appeared on ABC, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, Fox News. His work has been published by the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, National Review, many other prominent publications. For 9 years, he was the William E. Simon Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He's founder and editor-in-chief of Public Discourse, the Witherspoon Institute's online journal. In 2018, he published this book about transgenderism, When Harry Became Sally, and it is excellent. And it's full of important truth about this trend. The problem is, if you want to buy this book, you cannot get it from the world's largest bookseller, Amazon, like I did a couple of years ago, because Amazon has removed it from its list of offerings. Amazon's been selling this book and profiting from it for 3 years. But as of around February 21st, it's no longer being offered in any form. It's as if this book does not exist. And Dr. Anderson only learned that his book was removed from Amazon from people who were looking for it. And they notified him. Amazon wouldn't explain why they banned the book. He tweeted this: a week after they removed my book, Amazon still refuses to say which aspect of their, quote, content policy the book violates, after 3 years of not violating that policy, and they refuse to say which page of the book commits the offense. Several Republican senators sent a letter to Amazon's CEO about it last week, and they wrote, in its decision to remove Mr. Anderson's book from its platforms, Amazon has openly signaled to conservative Americans that their views are not welcome on its platforms. Amazon's short-sighted censorship of this well-researched and thoughtful contribution to modern American discourse is not just a decision made in poor taste, but an assault on free speech that carries weighty implications for the future of open discourse in the digital age. That's well said. And it's absolutely true, and it's more evidence of just how hostile to the truth the mainstream view of transgenderism is. They want to pretend like this book doesn't exist. They want to bury the facts that are in this book. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll look at some of the truths about transgenderism that the mainstream media don't want you to know. We'll be right back.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
It is a scientific fact that people are biologically male or female. It's a scientific fact that biological sex comes with physiological and even mental and emotional predispositions. But science can tell you nothing about a man feeling that he's actually a woman. There is no scientific explanation for that. Supporters of transgenderism say that when a person's thinking doesn't harmonize with biology, he shouldn't change his thinking, he needs to change his biology. They insist that any effort to correct the thinking is bigoted, discriminatory, and unethical. It's only by acting like the opposite sex, using hormone blockers or hormone therapy, or even going under the knife and scalpel, that these people can be who they really are. And that's going to lead to greater fulfillment and happiness in their lives. Now, it's hard to comprehend just how many contradictions there are in this thinking. Transgenders say gender is a, quote, artificial construct, yet at the same time, they encourage people to express their authentic gender identity, especially if it's different from their actual biological, scientific gender identity, through stereotypical or even cartoonish behavior and activity, like boys layering on makeup and costume jewelry. They say that a person's real self is separate from their physical body. But then, contrarily, they say that a person's physical body needs to be transformed to make that person whole. So they advocate that even children receive puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgery to match the physical body to the idea in the mind. And again, scientifically, this has no basis in reality at all. But our society that is supposedly so concerned about science when it comes to something like climate change, they say anyone who doesn't agree is anti-science. They also say if you try to drag out the science regarding transgenderism, you're a bigot. It's intolerant. It's discriminatory to look at the very facts themselves. In his book, When Harry Became Sally, Dr. Ryan Anderson says this. He makes a great point about children. It says activists believe that even small children have a real gender identity that may not align with the body. So they call for affirming transgender identities in young children through social transition followed by puberty blockers and eventually cross-sex hormones. This is the standard of care that these organizations promote. It says a 3-year-old is just beginning to learn the difference between boys and girls. So how could that child have any sense of being really a boy when everyone says she's a girl? Yet some, quote, experts insist that a preschooler can have a, quote, valid sense of gender identity independent of bodily sex. He quotes Dr. Scott Leibowitz in federal court saying, peer-reviewed research demonstrates that pre-pubertal children asserting a different gender identity from the one they were assigned at birth are cognitively capable enough to be aware of the gender they are asserting. The meaning of a child's gender identity assertion at a younger age is no less valid than the meaning of a gender identity assertion of an older child. And then Dr. Anderson asks, on what other subject is the assertion of a two-year-old, quote, no less valid than that of an older child or an adult? That is an excellent, excellent question. He quotes Diane Ehrensaft, a director of mental health at the Child and Adolescent Gender Center at University of California, San Francisco. And she says adults should actually be learning from children. Young transgender people, she says, are our best teachers in alerting us to the reality that gender exists primarily between our ears, in our brains and minds, and not necessarily by what is between our legs and so on. Dr. Anderson says, on what other subject do we consider children to be our best teachers? And this woman says that young children can teach adults by rearranging their gender identity and expression. They refuse to pin themselves down as either male or female. Maybe they are boy slash girl or a gender hybrid or gender ambidextrous, moving freely between genders, living somewhere in between. You get the idea. So this is looking at these young children and saying they have the ultimate wisdom in how they should be expressing themselves according to in matters of gender. Now, this says there are effective therapies to help children with gender dysphoria feel comfortable in their bodies. Indeed, 80 to 95% of such children do not persist in a transgender identity. Yet Adkins told the court that a transgender identity, quote, is fixed. It cannot be changed by others, and it is not undermined or altered by the existence of other sex-related characteristics that do not align with it. So they're saying that transgender identity is absolutely fixed, at the same time that they're saying that a child can be gender ambidextrous, that they can move freely between genders. Cisgender identity is certainly capable of changing in their view. But this is another quote from this book in the same vein. A guide for parents produced by the Children's National Medical Center suggests that social attitudes are the real problem, and therefore a red flag should be raised when the therapist seems to focus on the child's behaviors as the problem rather than on helping the child cope with intolerance and social prejudice. So the child couldn't possibly be doing anything wrong. They couldn't possibly have any part of the blame for there being problems with other children. It has to be the other children's fault. Now, let's just look at some facts that the transgender community would consider transphobic. Senator Paul brought some of these up. He was called inflammatory and ignorant. So one of these is one that I just mentioned there, that science shows that among children who struggle with gender dysphoria, 80% of girls and 95% of boys will reconcile with their biological sex if they are allowed to go through puberty. 80% of girls, 95% of boys, if you just let them grow up the way that they're supposed to, this feeling of being in the wrong body does not last. They'll be just fine. Here's another fact. Puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones have been shown to damage cardiovascular health, bone density, reproductive functions. They cause sterilization. So these are the standards of care that this nominee for the Assistant Health Secretary, Dr. Levine, is so supportive of. They're very problematic. They cause other problems apart from the ones we'll talk about in a moment with respect to mental health. Here's another fact. Nearly half of the people who identify as transgender experience anxiety disorders or depression. An estimated 41% have tried to kill themselves. Now, why is that? As we just heard in that excerpt from the book, they want to blame it all on society. But here's another fact. Those who undergo sex change interventions do not experience lasting benefits with regards to mental health. In fact, they are 19 times more likely to commit suicide. Aren't these important facts to consider? More and more people who have undergone surgery say they regret it. And some even undergo surgery to undo their surgery. This alone tells you becoming transgender isn't helping these people become who they really are, quote unquote. It's not leading to greater happiness and fulfillment in their lives. Professor Miroslav Georgievich is a leading genital reconstructive surgeon. For years, he's been voicing his concern about rising requests for gender reversal surgeries. He says that people wanting to undergo this transformation should get better counsel. And he says the effort to be politically correct is driving these decisions rather than what is actually correct, what's in the best interest of the people involved. And he says that institutions really have to overcome their fears of political correctness and conduct more research into questions raised by gender reassignment surgery. The British Telegraph published this man's concerns in 2017, but the transgender movement continues to march forward. Now, studies are rare. Stories of many unhappy transgender people are out there, and Dr. Anderson's book, When Harry Became Sally, has an entire chapter that is titled Detransitioners Tell Their Stories, and it is heartbreaking. Many of these people describe growing up dissatisfied, or they're questioning their sexual orientation early in life, but they didn't find happiness in anything that they tried. They were offered this radical solution, gender transition or transformation. Now, if you have a lot of faith in the wonders of modern medicine, this sounds easy. But the reality is, biological differences between men and women are far-reaching and very complex. Hormone blockers can prevent a voice from getting deep, or it can prevent a girl's hips from getting wider. Hormone treatment can shrink a man's testicles, or it can cause a woman to grow facial hair. Surgery can remove body parts that are specific to male or female, and it can attach artificial body parts to make things look somewhat normal. But the reality is that no matter how advanced or expensive the treatment or the procedure, science cannot turn a man into a woman or a woman into a man. It is absolutely impossible. Our biological sex is embedded into our DNA from our conception. It affects every system in our bodies. So you have people who are undergoing these procedures where they are doing irreparable damage to healthy parts of their body in an effort to try to reconcile their physical with what's going on in their mind. And so many of these people who undergo these procedures, they find themselves requiring substantially more medical attention over time. It doesn't make them happier or more fulfilled. They grow even more depressed and, as I said, in many cases, suicidal. And many of them say the doctors who advised them led them astray. Now, Professor Georgievich argues that these people wanting an operation need to know what they're getting into, and they need to be thoroughly cautioned about the risks. But even those who don't undergo these operations, they're often sad and depressed. That's why they want surgery in the first place. So advising them about the risks of an operation might prevent them from greater harm and regrets, but it's not going to solve their problem. People who consider themselves transgender experience far higher rates of mental health issues than the general population. Psychology Today wrote this in 2016. Approximately 6.7% of the general U.S. population suffers from depression. 18% grapple with some iteration of an anxiety disorder. But among those who identify as transgender, nearly half, experience these issues, and over 41% of trans men and women are estimated to have attempted suicide, a rate nearly 9 times as high as the rate of cisgender Americans. So mental health issues in the general population are already high, but there's something really alarming about the fact that almost every second transgender person battles these issues and even tries to kill themselves. And again, the fact that people who have undergone surgery are 19 times likelier than the average person to die by suicide, it shows that something is dangerously wrong. Now, the transgender movement will tell you what's dangerously wrong is the fact that society is so hostile to transgenderism. This Psychology Today article says, why do transgender people experience more mental health issues? This is their answer. It has nearly everything to do with the way they are treated. It's all about the way society treats them. So the only solution is you have to transform society. We have to make society wholeheartedly embrace transgender people and any and all forms of gender dysphoria. So everyone, no matter how they view themselves, no matter what they want to look like, no matter which bathroom or locker room they want to visit or which sport they want to play, everyone must consider this perfectly healthy and normal. If everyone in society just accepts everyone and everything and loves everyone and everything, then all those mental health problems and depression and suicidal tendencies experienced by transgender people, they'll just vanish. Because to say that that individual might need to adjust their thinking, that would be bigoted and discriminatory and unloving. We cannot do that. What do you think? Do you buy it? Society buys it. Society says this is the direction we've got to go. So virtually overnight, all the elites in our society, the politicians, the media, the educators, they've determined that this is how we're going to solve this problem. This is the message that we're going to send to individuals who are dissatisfied with their biological sex. If you're unhappy because your body doesn't match your thinking, well, we're going to change your body. And if you change your body and you're still unhappy, we're going to change society. And if you're unhappy, it's because society refuses to accept you and love you for who you are. The thinking is the only way these people will ever be fulfilled and happy is if society embraces this movement and just gives it anything that it wants. Every conceivable request, we have to fulfill it. Wow. This is exalting human will over truth. Human will over basic scientific facts. And the consequences are impossible to overstate. It's impossible to overstate the radical implications of this set of assumptions that we're being forced to accept. Everything that we're hearing, this is encouraging many thousands more people to pursue these choices, the life of transgender. They're encouraging thousands to pursue these medical transitioning treatments. And they're forcing society to completely remake itself, to prioritize what is supposed to be the path of happiness for these individuals. We must establish transgender restrooms. We must require medical insurance to cover transitioning treatments. We must allow biologically born men to play sports against women. We must replace some of our public school curriculum with gender fluidity instruction. So we're training the next generation to be completely free of any bias and discrimination. We must strip authority from parents who would resist encouraging gender fluidity in their children. We must make it criminal to misgender someone. We must prioritize these individuals' happiness over privacy, over public safety, over parental authority, over religious liberty, and anyone who disagrees can be publicly shamed, if not legally punished. And then we will have a truly fair and equitable and accepting and loving and happy world. That's the way the thinking is going. So now in our elementary schools, children are encouraged to question their biological sex. When any child decides to identify as a transgender, then everyone's supposed to go along. Everyone's supposed to support that and to act like it's a beautiful thing. And what happens when that transgender child has trouble with other kids, or they're unhappy, or they feel isolated or lonely? Well, the blame is on all the other kids, and the blame is on society. Let's just use some common sense here for a minute. Encouraging gender dysphoria in a child doesn't make that child happy. Convincing a child that their feeling of confusion is correct, that there is something wrong, you're absolutely right, this needs to be changed, that's not going to make that child happy. Convincing him that any trouble he has with other kids, which, you know, it's worth mentioning, every kid has trouble with other kids. To convince a child it's because those other kids are bigots, that's not going to make that child happy. It's just going to feed that child's sense of grievance, victimhood, martyrdom. Installing transgender restrooms in every building in America, that's not going to lead transgender people from depression into happiness. Winning wrestling matches and powerlifting competitions against women, that's not likely to give transgender men a genuine sense of accomplishment. Preventing any and all critical discussion about this movement, that's not going to give them reassurance that they need for success in life. No matter how accepted this movement becomes, it's not going to lead to happiness. The idea that sex changes and societal transformation is going to solve the depression and the misery and the heartache of this group of people, it's a lie. It's a terrible, dangerous lie. And it is a lie being promoted at tremendous cost, increasing the unhappiness and the trouble of so many of those who identify as transgender. And it's coming at the expense of so much in our society, and it's destroying the truth itself. I'd encourage you to read the cover story of our May-June 2019 Trumpet Edition, Climate, Gender, and the Fight Over Truth. It explains just how dangerous this assault on truth is, how many victims it is claiming, and who is the real author of this deception. The being that the Bible describes as the father of lies. Really, our society is in deep trouble unless we eliminate the lies and deception and we embrace the truth. I also want to point you to our booklet, Redefining Family. This is about the embrace of homosexuality that has taken over society. And this booklet was written back in 2013. And so it really was before the transgender movement came about. It's talking about same-sex marriage and the push for homosexual rights that was taking place at that time. But the principles that are described in this book apply absolutely to the transgender movement. It's just that it is now far more intense, and everything that's spoken about in here is even more relevant. The first chapter is about the homosexual revolution. The second chapter, questions that demand answers, questions about that are raised by homosexual activists that they're not answering, and that it applies to what we've been talking about with Dr. Levine and so many of these things that are just being pushed aside. Chapter 3 is about why family. the fact that God made male and female the way that he did, it was a conscious decision. It wasn't an accident that God created us this way. And we need to have respect for God and his creation and to look to the creator of all of these things to see why he did what he did. Chapter 4 is about the enemy of family and just how much Satan the devil tries to undermine and attack family in every way that he possibly can. Chapter 5 is called It Doesn't Affect Me, and it's talking about just how dangerous the tendency to want to just stand aside and to allow these changes to take place without confronting them actively really is. And if you think about just how many people allowed, stood aside as the homosexual movement made its forward progress some years ago, you look at where we are today as a result of that. Because society allowed that, that movement just kept on pushing and pushing. The transgender movement joined right on behind, and now society has been completely transformed. Those areas that we were battling over before have been completely accepted, and the battlefront has shifted to far more treacherous territory because of that indifference. Now, I want to just read a little bit of chapter 6 of this booklet. The title is All Men to be Saved. One of the most important, inspiring, all-encompassing truths in the Bible is this: God will have all men to be saved and to come unto the knowledge of the truth. He is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. You can read that in 1 Timothy 2:4 and 2 Peter 3 and verse 9. Everything God does, every decision he makes, every action, law, word, and thought is consistent with this aim. God is love. Love is what God is. It radiates from him. It is his way of life. This is a true Bible definition of love. Anything that is contrary to God and his nature and his thinking isn't actually love. At best, it is a counterfeit. God loves human beings and seeks our happiness, every person's happiness. He really does want us to thrive and to prosper. Now, many people believe this, but then they don't believe or accept the way God goes about it. They reject the way he defines love. They turn away from the knowledge of the truth. They certainly reject the notion of repentance, which means turning away from sin. They want God to love them, and they want to love God on their own terms. But still, God's great master plan is to give every human being who's ever lived the opportunity to come to the knowledge of the truth and to come to repentance, to turn from their way toward his way. God shows all men have sinned, but he is going to educate and give everyone the opportunity to change the way they think and act and to experience the love of God. Now, when you look at the Bible, it defines the love of God as keeping the commandments of God. God is love. Anything he commands is an expression of love, and we express that love by keeping those commandments with a willing heart. Now, you may think you know what love is, but if you don't study God's law, you do not know. Even many religious people, people who say they love Christ, hate the law of God. But any concept of love apart from the law of God is false. If you want to understand the love of God, you have to understand his law. God loves homosexuals. He loves transgenders. He loves all sinners. But we have to understand how much he hates sin. And his law is very clear about what he thinks about homosexuality and transgenderism and so many of the other sins that have absolutely swallowed modern society. He defines what is right and wrong. We do not. His law is the way to happiness. His law is the way that leads to fulfillment and joy. We'll talk more about that in the last word. But God loves human beings, and he's given every one of us a tremendous potential to become a part of his great, loving, enduring, eternal family, and to enjoy abundant life that we can't even conceive of. We have to go to him for the truth on these issues. We can't make it up ourselves. We have to submit ourselves to God in order to understand concepts like family and love and even happiness and abundance. He wants to give us all of those things. I would really encourage you to read, to request and read and study our booklet, Redefining Family, to learn the truth about these matters. We're going to take one more short break, and after this, our last word today about the path to true happiness.
It's time for today's last word.
What is the cause of happiness? How can we be happy? There's a lot of unhappiness in the world, but the solutions people often pursue don't fix things because they don't understand the cause. Take, for example, the transgender community. Unhappiness, depression, even suicidal thoughts are many times higher among transgenders than in the general populace. And what is their solution? Gender transition, hormone blockers, surgery. And society says, well, all their problems will go away if we just remake society as a whole and we give them complete acceptance of whatever they want to do, even if it means installing an extra bathroom into every building or passing laws to punish people who don't use people's preferred pronouns. The more these ideas are pushed, the more problems are created. The more that those transition procedures are promoted, the more evidence emerges that this simply doesn't help people like it promises to. In fact, many people later regret doing this. They say it was the most foolish decision of their lives. That's because none of these solutions gets to the real cause of the unhappiness. Many people neglect to even ask what the real cause is. But the underlying desire of every person, transgender or otherwise, is to pursue happiness. Virtually the whole world is united in this desire. But few people have ever found true happiness. Why is that? Well, the Bible reveals the cause of these problems, and it also tells us the solution. Proverbs 14 and verse 12 says, "There is a way which seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death." The truth of this proverb is evident all around us. Solutions people pursue seem right to them, but it turns out perceptions can be deceiving. When we try to devise our own solutions, only then can we realize we're only seeing part of the picture, or we misdiagnosed the problem. Jeremiah 17 and verse 9 says, "The human heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked." Not only do we not see reality in many cases, but we deceive ourselves because of selfish motives or impure desires. We try to work things out to favor ourselves, but we do so at other people's expense, and that creates more problems. So what is the solution? The Bible reveals that it always comes back to trusting God. Proverbs 1 verse 7 says, "The fear of the eternal is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." If we stop trying to devise our own solutions and we fear God and do as he says, then we're on the right track. That's the beginning of knowledge. Psalm 111 and verse 10 says, "The fear of the eternal is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do his commandments." God has actually spelled out the way that leads to success in life, and that way is his law, the Ten Commandments, the statutes and judgments. Put God first. Don't kill or hate. Avoid sexual sins. Don't steal. Don't lie. Don't covet. Honor your parents. Keep the Sabbath. It seems simple, but it actually yields the outcome that everybody wants. Proverbs 29 and verse 18 explains, "He that keeps the law, happy is he." Do you want to be happy? Is your life plagued by discouragement, doubt, depression, loneliness, even suicidal thoughts? Well, why not put God to the test? He promises that if you obey him, it'll transform your life in the most beautiful way imaginable. If you keep the law, you will be happy. And there is no other path to happiness. Mankind has rebelled against God's law since the time of the Garden of Eden. And that's why we live in a world of increasing misery and depression. Some of the laws God gave us relate to family. They govern marriage, how a man should treat his wife and a wife her husband, what their roles are, their responsibilities toward their children, the children's responsibility toward them. And there's a profound reason why God established family and created those laws. Not only do they lead to happiness in our physical lives, they also point to an even more important spiritual reality. God created family to point to his wonderful spiritual family. And in his great mercy, God gives everyone, on condition of repentance, access into this spiritual family. You can read all about this truth in a booklet by the Trumpet's editor-in-chief, Gerald Fleury, called The God Family Vision. You can find that on thetrumpet.com under our literature tab. But God gave those laws for a wonderful purpose. And because of our ignorance or flat-out rebellion, people have broken them with impunity, and generations have suffered for it. In the last few decades, mankind has attacked these laws regarding family on the largest scale ever, and the misery and unhappiness are mounting higher and higher as a result. Now, after 6,000 years of rebelling against God's law, mankind is still devising its own solutions to solve these problems, but none of them work. And suffering intensifies. And this lawless course will take us to the point where the world's suffering hits an unbearable peak. Sadly, only then will mankind be willing to be taught by God and to obey God and turn to him. You individually can take a different course. You can turn your personal life around. If you turn to God and you fear him and you obey him, you can reject the path that society has taken. Learn about the laws that govern family. Obey those laws and reap the marvelous fruits from that. You can be happy. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that will do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send me any thoughts on today's program to letters@thetrumpet.com. And I'll leave you with this thought from Hosea Ballou. Real happiness is cheap enough, yet how dearly we pay for its counterfeit. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
You've been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.